Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And this is Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, and I am here in the studio today with a long, long time friend. He's much older than I am. No, I'm just kidding. This is Paul French here in our studio today. And welcome, Paul. It's good to have you.
Thank you, John. It's good to see you.
It is great to be able to. I don't know the last time, maybe when we were teaching at Mundelein that summer.
Too many years ago.
It's been a long time, but Paul is the musician in Chicago, and we just happened to be lucky enough here in Southern California to have him here for the Pueri Cantores Festival. We're very privileged that our own diocesan choir is going to get to spend the day with you. Our diocesan children's choir will be singing with Paul in Pasadena, and they will have an amazing day with you and under your musical direction. And it's just going to be great. It's so good to have you here in Southern California. We hope that you will return many, many times.
Well, in the fact that there was 2 inches of snow in Chicago on Monday, I was very pleased to leave my coat in the car.
It is pretty beautiful. Mm. I just spent a few days, well, more than a few, unfortunately, in Philadelphia. Everywhere I went, I left my coat behind, and I go back outside, and it was freezing cold, and I go, wait, do I have a coat? Where is the coat? You just don't wear coats here. You know, it's quite wonderful.
I was in Miami a couple of weeks ago conducting a Pueri Cantores Festival, and, you know, you're always trying to figure out amidst these hundreds of young choristers where they're all going to sit. And, of course, when in Chicago, you have to figure out, well, where are they going to put their winter coats?
Their coats.
And I said, did you bring a winter coat? Did you bring a coat? And they all looked at me like I was a little daft.
Well, our big thing here is where do we store our flip-flops? You know? So Well, let's tell our audience who Paul French is. Paul is just a fabulous musician. You have been at Our Lady of Mount Carmel for how long?
For 18 years.
Wow, that's
yes.
A long time.
It is.
And what kind of choirs do you have there? It's a fabulous Catholic church right in
just
Chicago
north of,
proper?
Right, just north of the downtown. It's a beautiful Gothic church. It's 110.
Gorgeous windows. I remember that
yes.
Beautiful window in the choir loft.
But even more than that, it's got two really superb pipe organs.
And they're independent instruments, right?
They are. 90-year-old yeah. E.M. Skinner organ.
Gorgeous.
Which was fully restored in 83 and continues to be worked on and restored, and then in 1987, my predecessor, a really superb musician named William Ferris, conspired with his then pastor to say the choir loft was not necessarily the right place for an organ if you want a congregation to sing. So they put in a beautiful tracker organ from a Houston builder by way of the Netherlands, whose name was Peter Visser. And so you've got two very different organs and a very different reality, but it's all unified by a superb acoustic. And it's been 18 glorious years there.
And what kind of choirs do you have there?
So we have 5 choirs. We have two adult choirs. We have an adult choir that sings a wonderful classical literature from chant and Renaissance polyphony, a little bit of Baroque music, but mostly a lot of the really contemporary masters, Britten, Howells, the American composers. And every week I'm delighted to say that we sing a different repertoire. So there'll be a mass setting and motets and organ works generally of the same composer every Sunday. And it's really wonderful to unify a liturgy by sort of exploring the music of Palestrina. Not that there's organ music of Palestrina or much, or the music of Herbert Howells or myself or the music of my predecessor. William Ferris, who was not only my predecessor at Mount Carmel, but he was my teacher, composition teacher. And I actually.
At Northwestern?
No, independently.
Independently,
yes.
Okay.
Just as Leo Sowerby was his teacher independently.
Yeah, yeah.
He was mine, and he really made probably the most significant impact in my life as a mentor and model. But during his 18 years at Mount Carmel, he was not only engaged as music director, but composer in residence. And in that time, he probably created 300 or 400 pieces of music specifically for that parish.
Wow.
And so every
so that
week.
That library is rich.
Is. And we sing his music every week.
Every single week.
Every week. There are choral psalms that he left. And so some Sundays, the fourth Sunday of Lent, he will have composed in the B cycle 3 different settings. I think
wow.
when he came in 1983, he was a little bit more adventurous, writing choral psalms in 12 voices. And I think by the time he left, he realized maybe it needed to be a little bit more
maybe
practical.
Not every parish has 12-part choirs.
Well, I don't think he was really looking to sell this music, because it really has never taken off beyond our walls. I mean, there are certain pieces, but things like the choral psalms and choral gospel acclamation. So the versicles are all choral. Hymns with descants, motets.
That's glorious.
Organ works. It really is a legacy that we honor there at the parish.
Well, you not only honored his legacy at the parish, but he had a very famous chorale in Chicago, and you became the next conductor?
I did, and it was, so back in 1972... William Ferris and his musical and artistic partner, John Verossi, decided that there needed to be an ensemble that would not only feature Bill's music, and he was a Pulitzer Prize nominated composer, but also music of our age that was undeservedly not represented. And so for the last 45 years, the William Ferris Chorale has in Chicago been sort of the standard bearer of being an advocate for composers, contemporary composers. And it was my delight after Bill died. And I should just tell you, it was a tragically wonderful story. When we were in lessons, we'd often talk about this organist or that conductor that would die at the console or that would die on the podium. Well, the very young 63-year-old William Ferris died conducting the Verdi Requiem.
Oh, my
died
gosh.
Right on the podium.
I didn't know that about
yes.
him.
And it was tragic, and for all who knew him and loved him. But the powers that be in the chorale said, this is too good, after he died, and it took a long time to get beyond that. But they wanted to continue the mission of the ensemble.
The chorale.
And so for 4 years, they had all manner of guest conductors come in, notorious people like David Wilcox and Peter Schickele, who was also known as P.D.Q. Bach, and local and national composers and conductors. And I would do a concert in the series every year. So 4 years after Bill died, I was named a music director, and I was the music director for that ensemble for 12 seasons, and I stepped down in December of 2016. But I'm delighted to say that it continues to this day.
Oh, that's good.
They are continuing the work and continuing to...
Have they named a new conductor?
They haven't. They're in the, just like that 4 years
searching
after Bill
time.
Died.
Yeah.
It's a, let's do 3 series a year and invite guest conductors and see who fits with the mission and what we're trying to do. So
well,
it
we're
going to
hear a lot more from Paul in coming segments, but we need to hear some music. And you have been at Mount Carmel for 18 years, so we better hear some music from the choir of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. So this is a piece. We talked just briefly about you being a composer. We'll talk a lot more about that in the coming segment. But this is actually one of your compositions, Psalm 122.
Yes, it was a setting of a, it was a commission for a fine chorus in Oak Park, Illinois, home of Frank Lloyd Wright, or sort of a lot of the Lloyd Wright examples are still there. And it's set for double stacks of sopranos, altos, tenors, and basses, and at the end it has a beautiful soaring soprano solo.
I Will Lift Up Mine Eyes by Paul French. This is Music from the Tower, and we will be right back with a lot more from Mr. Music Chicago. Stay tuned. are back with Music from the Tower, and this is Paul French Day here in Southern California. We are so excited you're here, and we know already, just from our first segment, that you have been 18 years at Our Lady of Mount Carmel. We just heard the choir sing so beautifully, one of your compositions. So, Mr. Composer, you have a lot of compositions by many, many publishers, right?
I do, and I'm fortunate to have that. I had mentioned Leo Sowerby before, and he had said to Bill Ferris, if you hang around long enough, you're bound to be a success. And I think that's I'm a tried and true example of that.
Well, you have to hang around a lot longer than this, Buster. But,
So I've been working in the churches in the Archdiocese of Chicago for over three decades now, since I left college. This is what I do.
Well, let's talk about your college. You went to Northwestern. You went to St. John's.
I did. I went to St. John's. But before then, I think that the interesting thing, because so many of my colleagues had a different start, I really thought my NBA career was going to really take off as a kid, and that or the NFL. My life was about sports. And I had my first piano lesson in college. I had my first every musical lesson in college. I found a school.
This is fascinating.
St.
You know,
John's.
Most of the guests that come in this room, they started it,
whatever.
They
were fully formed by the...
Yeah,
yes.
They went to college as pretty good music.
My wife is a singer, and she had magnificent experiences throughout into high school. And my youngest son is a string bass player, and the... quality of
you have
examples,
two children, right?
Two boys, William and Andrew, but the youngest is the musician, and he plays with the Chicago Youth Symphony, and now he's at DePaul University. But I mean, the experience he had before he went to college were really astounding.
Was it frightening for you to go to college have a whole?
In retrospect, it was ridiculous. I grew up in a different era in the church where I just my parents went to masses that were mostly on folding chairs in basements. And I just thought, I looked at the music and I thought, boy, if I could learn four or five guitar chords, I could play in church. And I knew I wanted to do that. And so I figured it out.
So something in the church did call you.
Oh, I was attracted to church music. I wouldn't call it.
But would it be folk music at that
time?
Sure,
absolutely.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it was. And there was this energy about it that I really was taken with. And so in the eighth grade, I figured out the guitar enough to play. But I knew it was always going to be more than that. And I knew that I eventually wanted to study music, but I was busy with sports in high school. And so I figured out a college that would be St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota. I had a tiny music school in terms of what I wanted to study, which was composition. And I had read enough books on theory and whatnot to get them to take me in. It was a wonderful start. There's a Benedictine monk by the name of Father Jerome Collar who gave me just really superb lessons in composition, and I took my beginning piano. But I don't advocate that for anybody who wants to be a musician starting that way. I felt like I've been digging myself out of a hole for 20 years.
You're well out of your hole, my friend. Just tell you.
Thank you.
But it is interesting, at least to me, and it's almost like this show has sort of been a survey of that. Mm. The people who have started, especially because the show has a lot of church musicians that come in the door here, and it depends on their time of beginning in the Catholic Church. Like for me, by eighth grade, I was playing the organ and playing stations, and sure. Bishop Van, all the other old guys like me, that's where
and
they were.
Me.
Well, but then there's the next generation, like you and others, who they grew up in the folk era.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't hearing a lot of organ. They weren't hearing, they were mostly hearing ensembles. They were hearing folk music that was lively and peppy. And even our own rector is, as much as he loves the organ and loves classical music, he is a product of the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. where that music, he remembers the day he first heard this first Jesuit song and that, mm-hmm. And how that inspired him in their seminary days. It's amazing how the different periods of time in the Catholic Church really affected musicians and their track of life.
Absolutely. And that's why when I had mentioned William Ferris before, the reason why he was so crucial to me was he was the first adult male who was making his living as a church musician, but also in an uncompromising way. I mean, the music that he was making, both as a composer and as an organist, was sublime. And for me, that was exactly the model, the role model that I needed at that time.
And well, and
propelled
it's
me
kind
into
of music
what I'm
you
doing
made
now.
All these years.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And it just takes one little model, you know, and finding that person. But if that was the folk era, those people were hard to come by. You know, I was lucky enough to be at the Church of the Assumption, which you know, in Pittsburgh. And that was a little bastion of completely surrounded by folk music everywhere. In St. Louis, at the cathedral, just half a block down the street, was the Jesuit home of the St. Louis Jesuits. You know, so you felt like you were, you know, on a little desert island all by yourself.
And I know we're going to talk about this later, but that's exactly why I'm so intrigued and on fire about young people in church music,
right.
And that's why I'm here in California, is to work with these young people under the banner of the Puri Cantoris, which is the official student choral organization in the Catholic Church, and how important it is to get people, young people, just captivated by sacred music,
right.
And all that that can mean.
It's essential, isn't it?
Absolutely.
For the singing church and for what's coming.
Well, but it's not just for the singing church. I think Puri Cantoris is on the surface about music, but it's so much, it's about catechesis. It's about telling these young people that there is richness in faith and power in the life of the church, and music is your in.
Beautifully put. Excellent. We're going to hear a little bit more of your composition. So William Ferris was one of your teachers, and then you went on to Northwestern?
I did. I studied choral conducting at Northwestern, and then I went on to, after that, I decided, my wife and I said, before we were going to have children, let's have an adventure. And so I went to the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music, but I prefer to call it Il Pontificio Istituto di Musica Sacra in Rome, and studied chant and organ. And it was just a wonderful year.
How long? A year?
Just an academic
year.
Okay, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So,
and that was postgraduate school?
It was, yeah.
Oh, excellent. And so this is a composition also by you, and this is called The Prayer of St. Patrick.
Yes, it was written for the dedication of a liturnal organ from a friend, colleague in Brighton, Michigan, Robert Wolf, who commissioned the work, and his church is St. Patrick's Church, and so I enjoyed very much to set the St. Patrick's breastplate. It was also used at one of the papal liturgies at St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Yes, it got usurped by St. Patrick's.
It was beautiful. Thank you, Jenny Pasquale.
Exactly.
So it's had a life beyond the initial commission.
Right. It's in my choral series with St.
Right.
Patrick's on the cover.
And when you're listening, you listen that the organ uses the Irish melody Slane in the midst of it. So the organ will quote Slane.
This is a beautiful work by composer Paul French, The Prayer of St. Patrick, and we will be right back.
Thank you.
We are back. This is Music from the Tower, and this is John Romero, your host. And today we are enjoying Paul French, one of my dear friends from Chicago, happens to be in town for the Pueri Festivals. We're going to talk a lot about the Pueri International and the Pueri American Federation just coming up. But we really do. I want to hear one more piece that you have written, Paul. And this is an Ave Verum, and this is the William Ferris Chorale, because you were conductor of that chorale for how long?
I conducted them for 16 seasons, but...
But you were involved with them, right?
For 12 as music director, yes.
Right.
But even before that, I was
involved. You were the assisting conductor?
I was helpful, you know. In whatever way, and it was a great learning experience for me. This Ave Verum, I had the occasion to go to Boston 2.5 years ago, again, to conduct a Pueri Cantores Festival. And I ran into John Robinson, who is a British conductor who is now the head of the St. Paul's Choir School.
Yes, fabulous job.
Isn't he doing a great job? In Cambridge, Massachusetts, and just doing superb work with these at the choir school with these young men. And I was so taken with their singing that I dashed off this little setting of the Ave Verum and sent it off to him. Now, it was written for boys' voices, and what you're going to hear in this recording is the women of the William Ferris Chorale. This actually was my last concert with the chorale, and but you get
a... How special.
It was. I wanted to just do a piece of mine amidst... The final concert really was a retrospective of William Ferris's works, and there are so many of them, but I wanted to do a piece of mine. So this Ave Verum is based on the traditional chant, Ave Verum Corpus Natum, etc. It's basically an arrangement and an adaptation of that chant melody.
With harmonization underneath?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Cool. We can't wait to hear it. This is Ave Verum by Paul French, written for the St. Paul's Boy Choir in, I didn't know that chapter, but it's a beautifully sung piece, also available through Morningstar Music, but it's... William Ferris Chorale in your final concert.
Yes.
Very, very cool.
In December of 2016.
And we'll be right back. And then we're going to talk about a lot of Pueri Cantores. Stay tuned. Music from the Tower on Relevant Radio.
Thank you.
And that was another beautiful piece by the William Farris Chorale. So we heard two great pieces by them, Paul French's own arrangement of Ave Verum, and you were just listening to Were You There, a setting by Leo Nestor, American composer Leo Nestor. That was recorded by the William Farris Chorale with Paul French conducting. Today we've been enjoying a whole hour with our friend Paul French from Chicago, and Paul has just taken on a brand new role. Tell us about that, Paul.
Well, Puerre Cantores is an international choral organization in the Catholic Church for students, and it was really founded in the modern age in the early 1950s in France by a Monsignor Maillet, and it was quickly then assimilated to Rome and became European and then international in scope. But it's, as I had mentioned before, it's the student choral organization of the Catholic Church. And so there is international federations, and then there are national federations, and I represent here the American Federation, Puerre Cantores. It's located, its offices are located here in Orange, California, and we have many hundred Puerre Cantores affiliated choirs throughout the United States.
And there are regional festivals like the one that our choir sang in.
Absolutely, and so we will organize festivals on three different levels. There are festivals for high school singers, there are festivals for treble voice singers, which are the high sopranos and alto singers, both boys and girls, which would be all the way from fourth grade through high school. And then there are mixed voice festivals, which would comprise sopranos, altos, tenors, and basses. And so the changed boys' voices are involved in that. But we will have anywhere from several hundred to very many hundred singers at a particular festival. I was leading a festival in Chicago in 2012, and they billed it as the choir of 1,000 voices, and we didn't quite manage 1,000, but we got almost 900 singers together to take part in that.
When I was at the cathedral in St. Louis, you came and conducted our festivals. We had them right there at the cathedral. Our own David Ball, organist here, was one of the organists for that festival, and we also did a festival together in Chicago.
Puerre Cantores believes that the power of sacred music, and this sacred music that I'm talking about is, I wouldn't want to seem elitist, but it's a more serious sacred music. So we'll sing chant, and yes, children can sing chant and sing it beautifully.
Beautiful.
And with great understanding, polyphony and hymnody, and just sing a choral liturgy in a most wonderful way. And as I'd mentioned before, the reality of the work of Puerre Cantores is to transform the lives of these young people through the beauty of sacred music. And oftentimes, individual choirs, whether they be parish choirs or school choirs, don't necessarily have the opportunity to always sing this music, or these festivals are generally held in magnificent acoustics and architectures, like your cathedral in St. Louis. And so we've got regional and national festivals that we do. And
are these festivals almost always in the context of a mass?
Yes. The high school festivals, by their very nature, are adjudicated. So they will come and...
Like a normal high school festival.
Yeah, like a high school festival. They'll come and sing their pieces, and they'll be judged on their performance. And then they will gather, all of the high schools will gather together to prepare a couple of pieces and sing them as a massed choir. But the treble choir festivals and the mixed choral festivals are in the context of Eucharistic liturgy, and oftentimes the local ordinary, the Episcopal bishop or the cardinal will preside in the cathedral setting. And so there is a wonderful wow factor for not only the kids, but their families, for all who hear. And as I'd mentioned before, it's just about transforming the lives of these young people, getting them to be engaged and in love with the church through this medium of sacred music.
Well, and to know that there is this sacred music for some choirs, especially maybe out here in California, they don't have the opportunity to sing chant on a normal basis as we might on the East Coast.
Oh, I just don't think it's the East Coast or the Midwest or the South. I think that's the good work of Puerre and the challenge of Puerre, that there is this sacred music that is really quite neglected. You know, the church is very clear that says there is this treasury of sacred music that is to be, quote, preserved and fostered. And we're talking about the fostering piece, using this music, not just listening to it on CD, but
fostering
it.
Yes, in meditation or whatever.
Whatever.
But to actually be performing it.
That's right. And then every 5 years, we take, for those who are able to and raise the funds, take a trip to Rome for an international gathering. There are international gatherings nearly every year at various places.
Yes, this year Barcelona, one of our local choirs is going.
Sure. But like in 2015, we took 2,000 singers from the United States to Rome, and Pope Francis led Mass on New Year's Day in 2016 in concert with the Sistine Chapel Choir, and it was extraordinary. It was an extraordinary event. So all of the English-speaking contingency gathered at St. John Lateran for a Mass, and there were 2,800 children, English-speaking children. And then all 6,000 young people gathered at St. Peter's in Rome for Mass on New Year's Day. But what was fascinating about this was the Latin language was the lingua franca internationally. Mm-hmm. We couldn't necessarily speak to each other, the Germans and the French and the Poles and the Irish and the South Africans and the Central African and the Indians and the South Americans. But we came together and we sang beautiful music in Latin and actually prayed the rosary in Latin before the Mass, and it was a very powerful and moving experience.
So, well, I've been fortunate enough to take a few choirs over to that festival, and it's astonishing, you know. And often the ones who struggle the most with the chant are our American kids. You know, you're hearing the other ones just whipping it off, and our kids are, you know, a little mumbly because it's not our common language,
sure.
You know, but it's getting there. We're getting there, little by little.
And that's the work we're doing here.
Thanks to Pueri, it's happening.
That's the work we're doing here.
60,000 children internationally belong to this federation.
That is correct.
And how many in the United States? Do you have a guess?
I would imagine that we've got nearly 6,000 or 7,000 here in the United States.
That's fabulous.
It really is. It really is. And it just, you know, again, we're moving. The church is in crisis in terms of young people turning away. I mean, research is out there. Millennials are turning their back on the church. They're not finding what they're looking for.
What they're looking for, right.
And so what we're trying to do with Pueri Cantoris is assist in our part to stem that tide.
Well, and sometimes with young people, I think we have this misnotion, and it's usually the 30 and 40 year olds that have it, you know, that think that the only way to get kids back is all this rock music, music they hear on the radio, that kind of stuff, folk music. And they're thinking of their own age, you know, but I'm finding that most of the young people love the liturgy. They love sacred music. They can't get enough of it. There's nobody that comes to our choir camp that sings one pop thing. But when they leave us, nobody goes, well, you know, we didn't sing any spirit and song this whole week. You know, we sang Palestrina and chant and all of these gorgeous things. All you have to do is feed them and they take it.
Amen.
You know,
amen.
It's there.
And that's the work of what Pueri Cantoris is all about.
Well, we are proud to have the president of Pueri Cantoris.
Well, it's an honor to be the president of the Board of Directors of the American Federation. Internationally, the presidents of these national federations are the conductors and composers. So it's more of an honorary title. But here in the United States, our work is about also raising the funds so that this work can continue.
That's right. This is a worthy cause to invest not only time, but some money. And you're also the publisher or the editor of our published choral series.
That's correct.
Through Pueri Cantoris, published by World Library.
That's right.
It's a beautiful series. We're singing some of these pieces on Saturday, beautifully edited. And so this is a great organization. If you have children out there, if you know people that have children's choirs, they should be members of the Federation and come to our festivals.
And if you would like to see further information or some video examples, if you would go to the Pueri Cantoris website, which is www.pcchoirs.org, pcchoirs.org.
And we'll have that on our website, as well as all of today's music and a little bio about Paul. And we'll make sure all of the links to their websites are on our website at ChristCathedralMusic.org. So, Paul, thank you so much for being with us and telling us all of this, sharing all this great music with us. It's just been a pleasure. It's just a joy to see you again and an absolute pleasure to have you on the program. We have one last piece that we're going to share. And this is actually from the Choir of 1,000 Voices, right?
That's correct. At Holy Name Cathedral in Chicago back in 2012, we gathered these almost 900 grade school children and high school children for a festival. And this final piece is a setting of the Te Deum, which is Latin for "You are God, we praise you." And that cathedral was just filled with the voices of these children. And you could just tell so many of them had never had an experience to sing sacred music like this, and they were just jumping out of their skins.
Well, and to be able to sing it with so many other young people,
yes,
that love music.
To look around and say, hey, all these other people who
sing music is an okay thing to be part of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. John, I thank you for this opportunity to be here and talk about Puri Cantores, but also to see you. It's been too long.
It's just absolutely fabulous. Well, this is Music from the Tower, and until next time, I encourage you to get out there and listen to some live music, some great music, but in live performance. Don't miss hearing great live music. And next time you see a Puri Cantores festival, go to it and attend it and support it. Thank you, Paul, for being with us. This is Music from the Tower, and we'll be with you next time.